It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's late fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. We are mere days from the winter meetings, and seems likely that the next time we talk, there will be a lot more clarity about a lot of player destinations. Certainly seems we'll have more clarity on two particularly high-profile player destinations by then. But right now, we don't. So we are still going to talk about some speculative stuff and talk about some moves that have already happened and just talk fantasy baseball, even though it's December, so let's get going. We now do have actually some clarity on Shohei Ohtani. We know that it's a relatively short list of destinations where he is likely to be pitching next year and hitting. And so the first question is, if you are intrigued by him from a fantasy perspective, where do you like him most of the places that we know are still in play?
Yeah, of those places, I think the best fantasy destinations are probably the Cubs and the Dodgers. Those are National League teams with really talented lineups. I mean, you're looking at the last two teams to represent the National League in the World Series. So I think those are both great landing spots. Among the spots that have the more international slot money, if we think that that's a factor, that's the Rangers, Mariners, and Angels. I'll say this, from a pure baseball fan perspective, I would love to see him on the Angels. I would love to see Mike Trout, now that he has Justin Upton with him, and have Ohtani there, and let's get a little more league emphasis on Trout because he, from a personal perspective, clearly deserves it. I just think it'd be really fun to see Trout and the Angels be really good with a superstar hitter and a superstar pitcher. But back to fantasy, I think it's Cubs or Dodgers would be the most advantageous situations for him. I think his pitching value in fantasy is going to be so much greater than his hitting value that I've really narrowed my focus to the teams where I think he could do the best as a pitcher, and I'm not thinking as much about the hitting. Do you agree with that idea?
Yeah, that was definitely, I was kind of going to be my follow-up question for you anyway, and I'm somewhat on record on this already. I'm pretty skeptical of the degree to which he's going to be an impact offensive player in Major League Baseball. I'd love to see it. I'm pulling for it. But I just think it is so difficult. I think that if he is the pitcher that people hope he will be in the U.S., that's going to push even more against him getting frequent opportunities to hit as anything but the pitcher batting ninth. I mean, there certainly are possibilities. You know, you keep hearing these hints that San Diego may be going the kind of most aggressively regarding that sort of thing. But again, you know, I'm not sure he's the kind of hitter you want in San Diego anyway. So, I'm with you. I think if we're laying this out right now, the number one priority is where is the pitcher going to benefit most? And I think that particularly points to the Dodgers, even over the Cubs. My reasoning there being that the Dodgers have shown themselves to be very flexible and creative with managing pitchers' innings, with handling pitchers with physical limitations. And I think it's pretty safe to guess that given the kind of workload Ohtani has had, and given the kind of workload that starting pitchers in the Japanese major leagues typically have and that he has had, you know, this is not a guy that's likely to be asked to carry a Jake Arrieta, Max Scherzer-type load. This is not a guy that they're going to say go out there 33 times and give us 7 innings a start. You know, I think you are hoping for, I could be wrong on this, but I think you're really hoping for 160 to 180 great innings. And if there's one team that I really feel confident can squeeze out the absolute best from a guy over a limited number of innings and really manage it, that's the Dodgers.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You're right then. And their bullpen looks like it will be really good again next season, which, I mean, just helps his chances of maybe having some five-inning starts, some just maybe 5 2/3 inning starts, and coming out of it with a win. I think the Cubs are advantageous, too. I think that they will build a good bullpen. They have some pieces already in place for next season so that they could be flexible with him. But, yeah, I think we're both of the same mind. Like, from a hitting perspective, Texas is probably the place where you'd like to see him. It's an American League team. He could be a DH at times. It's a good park, which there aren't many of on that now shortened list, right, of teams. But The more I've really looked into it, there's really a couple scenarios. So assuming you're not in a league where he's generating hitting and pitching stats on the same day, which that doesn't seem to be where most leagues are going, from a hitting perspective, if you're in a shallow league, like a 10-team type league, there are 25 homer players on waivers the way offense is going right now in those leagues. So you really don't need him to help your hitting lineup. And if you're in a deeper league, you need him so much at pitcher that you can't afford. You don't have enough pitching excess on your roster probably to afford to put him into a hitting spot. So to me, that's mostly out the window unless he surprises us and, you know, is a much more impactful hitter than we think. But I think going into the season, like, I wouldn't even mind the Giants just because of that home park. And I know it's not the greatest scenario to win 17 games next year or something, but just for that home park, I think he could put up really nice ratios in that park and in some other parks in that division and just be a really impactful pitcher. And I see the same thing you do. I see fewer than 180 innings, probably closer to 160, but hopefully really good innings.
We move to the moves that have happened. One of the bigger transactions in what's been a pretty quiet hot stove season so far is Wellington Castillo back to Chicago, this time on the south side. He is a guy whose upside is pretty good. I mean, the last 2 years, he's been a pretty productive fantasy catcher, the kind of guy that you plug in and you're basically happy with in a mixed league. You know, it's possible to find an upgrade, but a guy that if you got him, you say, okay, I'm set at catcher. The problem is twofold. And it's that, one, the past 2 years, he's been in really good parks to hit, Arizona and Baltimore. And two, particularly last year, he was in a pretty good lineup. Both of those things are going to take a hit when he goes to the White Sox. And he's a guy who, it's not like every single year he's been really good. He's had some years where he slugged 380. So, given the inconsistency, the relatively short track record of him being a guy you're really sort of comfortable plug and play, and given the downgrade in his circumstances, is he still a guy that you have that level of confidence in, or does he move more into the suspect category of catchers for you?
Yeah, maybe a little more suspect. I think maybe like the back end of the top 10. I mean, when it initially happened, I thought, oh, this could push him out of the top 10. And then I started looking at other catchers who I would have to replace him with and wasn't really that inspired by them. So I think he does still sit in the top 10, but I think it's fair to worry about whether he can compile even 50 RBIs and 40 runs scored next season. I could see 15 to 20 homers, but I look at him from the last three seasons, like he's been sitting probably averaging about 60 RBIs a season and then averaging in the low 40s for runs scored. And if you put him in and that's with Arizona and Baltimore really for most of that time, and those are at least pretty more favorable circumstances than what he's going into. So if we just knock a little bit off there and have him more around 53 RBIs, 17 homers, maybe about 40 runs scored, probably what, like kind of an average batting average, something that doesn't really hurt or help you, I think that puts him near the back end there, where if you draft him as your number one catcher, it's fine. But if you're in a one catcher league, you're keeping your eye out on waivers through the early part of this, maybe throughout the entire season to see if you could catch something better.
Mike Minor signs a 3-year deal with the Rangers, and he's going to start? Man, I really like him as a reliever, but there's a reason he ended up as a reliever. Do you like him at all as a starter? Do you like him in a deep league as a starter who you're hoping goes to the bullpen for a team that's had all kinds of bullpen turnover? How do you look at Minor for fantasy in 2018?
Yeah, this is one of those situations where I feel like I'm much more comfortable drafting Minor in a shallow league than in a deep league. Now, obviously, I would have to take him earlier in the draft in a deep league, but the reason I say that is in a shallow league, like a 10-team league, you can probably next year get him late as just like a boomer bust late-round pick. And if he converts well back into the rotation, he has some rotation success in Atlanta, but that's a fairly long time ago. But because of that upside, you draft him late. If things don't really work out during April, you let him go and you try the next thing, and there's going to be options for you. In a deep league, I would be like a 15-team league, let's say, I would be really hesitant to count on him as my fourth or fifth starter. As my seventh starter, that's fine, and I'm mixing and matching and accepting he may not work out. And then as far as whether I give him any added value on the possibility that he moves into the bullpen and becomes a closer, I don't know. I feel like that's maybe too speculative, because if he moves into the bullpen, he may not be a closer. He's left-handed. I mean, the Rangers don't really have a I don't think of Alex Claudio as a a really firm closer right now, but I don't think they have to put him as the closer. So I think that's too speculative to add anything to his value. Do you think, would you draft him maybe on the hopes that you do end up with a closer, or and would you draft him as a, like someone who's actually you need in your lineup every week?
No, I would definitely not do that. I would be, I'm basically wait and see. I'm exceedingly skeptical of him as a starting pitcher at this point. I'd love to see it. Would be good if it worked out. But I think that he's a guy that I sure would have liked as kind of closer in waiting type if he'd signed somewhere to be somebody's eighth inning, almost, not that he's this good, but to be kind of Andrew Miller type, maybe get four or five outs at a time. I would have liked him. As it is, I'm not really a big fan.
Now is your lack of optimism for him as a starter, is that more, and it could probably both of these things, but is it more related to concerns about his ability to hold up as a starter physically, or actually just successfully, you know, work out of the rotation?
It's definitely both. I mean, he has not been a quality starter since 2013, and that's a really long time. And he basically has 1 year as better than a league average starter in his career. That was when he was 25. Now 5 seasons ago. So I don't see it. He was never quite the starter the Braves hoped he would be, except for one good year. I don't see the reasons to think that he would be a quality starting pitcher.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Other than the fact that he was a good reliever last year, but we both know that that's not, doesn't
right.
necessarily mean that he's going to be a quality starting pitcher. So yeah, lots of room. And also, I think we haven't really said this much, but this isn't an easy situation to go into as a starting pitcher. He's not going to the Padres or the Giants or something like that. Like, this is American League and a fairly tough home park, and and you've got the Astros in that division and maybe an improved Angels lineup. It's not going to be an easy road for him.
Another guy that, I mean, I'll just give it away up front, I'm awfully skeptical, but the Cardinals are smart, and they believe in Miles Michaelis, and they brought him in, and they think he's going to be a guy for them. He was really good for Yamiuri the past 2 years. Really good, especially last year. Two of the last 3 years is probably a more accurate way to put it. But even so, that's not here. And maybe it works out. Again, the one thing I would note about the Cardinals, and one small thing about this that gives me some optimism, is that, and this is kind of one of my, I don't have much firsthand knowledge of them that's valuable anymore, but it is the same people in that front office more or less that I covered ages ago. And they were often very hesitant to get into the market for players from the Far East, be it Japan or Korea, basically because they've said up front, look, we don't know what we're getting. We don't scout it well enough. We don't, you know, they didn't have a lot of confidence in their analytics. It wasn't they didn't think guys couldn't play. They just didn't really feel like they were confident in what they were getting. They made a commitment to this guy. I mean, this was not a one-year, $1 million flyer. This is a commitment to a guy they believe is going to be a part of their club. So given that it's a smart organization that has in the past had some hesitation to make those kind of commitments, there must be something they saw that they like. With that said, I am almost certainly wait and see on him, let somebody else dive in if they're excited. Maybe if we see something in spring training, some pitch or some trick that he has that makes him really exciting, you know, maybe I draft him in a draft at the end of spring. But for me right now, I'm not going to tell you not to, because, again, I can see the argument, but I'm not going to make that commitment myself. Do you see things that you like that maybe make you a little more willing to dive in than I am?
Okay, here's what I like. Now, beyond the fact, like, obviously he pitched really well overseas. That's why he got a fairly significant deal. Like, so that goes without saying. But when I go a little, and even not that deep, but a little deeper into his performance. So last season, his K per nine rate was 9. So he's striking out a batter an inning. Let's say he'll do a little bit worse than that in the majors. So he's not going to be a high strikeout starter for you, but it's the control skills. So last season, just 23 walks in 188 innings. The season before that was 23 walks in 91 and two-thirds. Before that, weirdly enough, it was 23 walks in 145 innings. So his walk rate is really low. If he could keep that level of a walk rate in the majors, then he's probably going to provide you with a decent whip. And that's one of the two ratio categories that you're worried about. So If his whip's decent, then really it's a matter of whether he keeps the ball in the yard, which pitchers have been struggling with, and you know, and then can give you a serviceable ERA. But he could be someone who, even if he has an ERA in the fours, he has a whip that's maybe around 1.2 or in the low or one, a little higher than 1.20, which at least means he's only hurting your ERA at the time. So, and then on the flip side, a minor, this is someone who's entering a much more favorable circumstance, yeah. National League, versus with Yadier Molina, better home park to pitch in. So that probably makes me a little more optimistic. So I think, I try to put myself in this position. Let's say it's round 27 in your 10-team league draft in March, and he's sitting there, and so is Mike Minor, and you're just going to grab one as a flyer. I think I would maybe rather grab Mikolas and hope that the Cardinals are onto something than grab Minor. Which one do you think you would rather take if you're just going to, as a flyer, pick and see what happens?
I'm with you there because I think the upside is higher. I think there, I can definitely see a scenario where this guy, again, where they found something and he makes 30 pretty good starts for a pretty good team. One thing I would say, to go back a half a step, his ratios kind of worry me a little bit. And the reason is when we're talking about Japan, where the caliber of power hitter you're facing is not the same as it is here. If your strikeout, and not just Japan, I think this is somewhat similar for guys in the minor leagues here. Those guys who get by not walking anybody without just astronomical strikeout rates worry me when they get to the big league, because I worry about throwing too many strikes. And I worry about being that guy who just pounds the zone, and you get to guys who can hit strikes out of the park, and you find yourself, yeah, only walking 40 guys in 180 innings, but also giving up 33 home runs. That's the thing that worries me. Again, I haven't seen a guy pitch, so you know, to some extent, this is all really speculative. But when I look at that stat line, those guys who get by places other than the major leagues, who get by in large part by throwing strikes, I always wonder how that's going to translate when you get to hitters who can punish you for throwing strikes.
No, that's a really good point. And, you know, if that's what happens, something will have to give in the majors. Either his walk rate will climb and he'll have to nibble more, or he'll start giving up a lot of home runs. And we'll just have to see, you know, how it works out. But, yeah, he's in that late-round flyer-type territory. And I'll describe him the same way I described Minor, where I'm much more comfortable taking him in round 27 in a 10-team league than taking him in round 17 in a 15-team league and possibly having to, and you know, starting off a season feeling like I need to count on him week in, week out. The matchups will probably be more favorable for him, but if his strikeout rate settles in the majors, maybe more down around 7 strikeouts per 9 innings, then he has to be providing useful ratios. Otherwise, you don't want him in your lineup.
It has been 3 full seasons since Doug Fister posted a Major League ERA lower than 4.19 or a Major League WHIP lower than 1.38. He is now going to a place that is not exactly kind to pitchers. Can you make any kind of case that this is a guy I want at all on draft day in anything other than a deep AL-only league, because he's going to be a starter for a good team and maybe he'll get me 12, 13 wins?
Yeah, if I was going to make the case, it's that his strikeout rate really skyrocketed with the Red Sox last season. So consistently in his career, his strikeout rate is about 6 strikeouts per 9 innings. It's even kind of when he was struggling with the Nationals and the Astros, it had fallen down into the 5s. And then all of a sudden last season, it's 8.3 strikeouts per 9 innings with Red Sox. That's a big jump. So then you look a little deeper and you see that last season, his average fastball velocity is punching up now around 90 miles an hour. And it really hadn't been there since way back in about 2011. It had kind of fallen down to 89 and then 88 and then all the way down to 86 miles an hour in 2015. And it was back up to 90 last season. So if there's one reason to consider him, again, another late-round flyer-type option, it's that maybe he can keep that strikeout rate up around maybe 7.5 or 8 per 9 innings, keep the velocity up, and then be someone who you can mix and match. I definitely put him third out of the 3 starting pitchers we've discussed in the last few minutes. But there's my case. Did I sell you on him at all or no?
I could see it. I'm probably not going to be the person who does it, but I can see it.
Yeah.
Yusmeiro Petit has, as far as I'm concerned, quietly become one of the really better relievers in the game. He had an outstanding season last year with the Angels, and was pretty good for a couple years before that with the Giants. He was okay with the Nats, but this guy, it's weird because a lot of his ratios have been all over the place. And last year, his strikeout rate just soared from what it had been most of his career, except for 1 year in San Francisco. But he's a guy you can look at the numbers and just kind of convince yourself he's anything. He is going to what should be a pretty favorable situation for a reliever. In Oakland, you know, you got to figure either he will be pitching in very high leverage situations, pitching a lot of innings, or both. So to me, the question is, do you buy that he really is the guy that he was at age 32 in 2017, or do you think that that was maybe a career year, maybe think that pitching 90 innings in relief catches up to him? Is he somebody you have an eye on draft day in the absence of knowing whether he's closing for the A's?
Yeah, assuming that he's not closing, I think he's not someone, this is going to be a weird answer, but I think he's not someone who I want to draft, but he is someone maybe I want to add pretty early in the season and then rotate him in my lineup when I need him. I do think that maybe that was the career year, so maybe the ERA climbs back up into the low, maybe even 3.3 or something like that, maybe a whip higher, maybe around 1.10. And 90 innings next season would be a lot, but maybe he throws 80 or 85 and strikes out 90 batters. Those stats are becoming increasingly valuable coming off the offensive explosion we've seen. So it's getting harder and harder to find useful starters for that reason. In a weekly transaction league, a lot of weeks you may just decide to use someone like Petit at the back end of your pitching staff because he won't hurt you, and hope that maybe you pick him in the week that he happens to get a vulture win or maybe picks up the odd save. So I think that he could be useful. Now, the reason I probably don't draft him is just that there are a lot of pitchers kind of roughly in that range. And he was one of the best ones of the group last year, but that doesn't really mean that he'll necessarily be one of the best ones of the group this year. You could grab Michael Givens on Baltimore. Like, there's a lot of options in that group, even staying away from the Andrew Millers and the really famous ones. So, and Dellin Betances, like those ones that have more name value. So I think I probably wouldn't go out and draft him. I just don't think it's necessary. But then I'd either like to get Petit or someone like him onto my roster earlier in the season just because he gives me that option when I don't like my pitching matchups each week.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I'm mostly just skeptical that season was real. Like, it's less about the opportunity and that. I just think I won't be at all surprised if he's not 3-3 but like 4.25 next year. And that's not really a guy I want very much. So,
yeah, you're right. He very well could be. Looking back to his time like with the Giants, like he was basically sitting around 3.6 or so for his ERA in that time. So, and maybe he ticks all, and that's a favorable situation. So you're right. Maybe he ticks all the way back up to there, or even closer to 4. And then he doesn't hold any value. That's the thing with these middle relievers. It also only takes a couple bad outings for a season of a 3 ERA to become 3.8 or 4 for a middle reliever. It's not like a starter where they can shake that off over time by accumulating innings. So you run like a walking on a narrow rope, really, with those players. For that reason, again, I'm probably not going to waste a draft pick on one of them. I'll just pick them up as I need to throughout the season. But right now he's on my list of people who I would consider picking up if I needed someone for a week.
Not a whole lot of really exciting names in non-tenders. Sometimes there are some pretty interesting names in there. This year it was not really that exciting a list, but a couple of intriguing names. Mike Fiers and Matt Adams. Do you have real interest in where either of those guys winds up? Will either of their values take a jump for you if they end up in a particular place?
Yeah, I'd say for both of them, I have a little interest, maybe a little more in Fiers. And it's because of something I just mentioned, that pitching is hard to come by right now. So, he struggled a lot last year. He did have stretches last year where he was okay and was usable in some of the deeper mixed leagues. If he got back to the National League, got into a more favorable situation, you know, then I'll keep an eye on him as a possible late-round pick. His strikeout rate in his career is pretty solid. So, and his career whip is 1.29, which isn't good, but it's not terrible. So, like, if he got into a nice National League team, either a really good National League team or just a really nice home park, then I'd have some interest. As far as Adams goes, I think it would be deeper mixed leagues just because the first base position is so deep right now. But this could be, for his overall fantasy value, a real boom, because he wasn't going to play where he was, and now he might be able to find a job as a starting first baseman, or at least the heavy side of a platoon.
Are there places in particular that intrigue you for Adams? Is there any place you kind of have an eye on where you'd like for him to end up?
I think overall I'd just like him to get into the American League, and just because then he has the, because his outfield skills I think now are, like, people pretty much have agreed that he's not a really good fit in the outfield. So I'd like to see him get into the American League so that he can bounce between DH and first base, so that if he's hitting, there's always a reason to put him in the lineup. I don't know if you've picked out a team maybe that you have in your head that you really like to see him at, but really any team in the American League that doesn't have some two guys completely set at first base and DH, then I would have some interest in him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one team that has definitely kind of crossed my mind is Boston. I mean, I think that's a place where you'd be really intrigued. They haven't really, they have an opening almost certainly at either first base or DH, so that's a guy where I could see there being a real fit. And, you know, that's a guy that I could see thriving in that lineup, in that ballpark. So that's certainly a place I would be kind of intrigued if he ended up, and seems like a possibility.
Yeah, and Boston really went the ultra-safe route last year with Mitch Moreland.
Yep.
And kind of got what they paid for, right?
Yep.
Like, they went the ultra-safe route. He was fine. He wasn't spectacular. That helped their offense to be fine, but not spectacular. So I haven't heard a lot about them aiming really, really high in filling those spots. So maybe someone like Adams, who I do think has a little more upside than Moreland, because he hasn't really had enough opportunities probably to be a full-time or close to a full-time player.
Ryan Healy, I mean, quickly sort of knee-jerk, it doesn't really seem like any significant change in your overall context going from Oakland to Seattle. Same division, hitter-unfriendly ballpark. Decent lineup. They're closer in quality than you might think. Does he take any kind of change in value from that move?
Not really. If I was going to say anything, it'd be like a few percentage points of an uptick in value. And I think you made the right point that I think the perception is that the Mariners have a much better lineup than the A's. And then last season on run production, that wasn't really true. Now, I do think the Mariners are in a little more of a go-for-it mode, a lot more of a go-for-it mode than the A's are. So I think there's probably a higher floor on the Mariners lineup in general. Like, they're going to try to make that a lineup that's really high-scoring, whereas the A's could make some long-term type decisions with their lineup at some point, where they maybe give someone like Franklin Barreto more like playing time, even at the expense of short-term production. So I think maybe Healy's floor is just a little bit higher, being on the Mariners, in that he'll be in a better lineup. He should be in a better lineup next year, but I don't think it's a massive lineup upgrade like a lot of people might have thought it was. So for me, he's still there where he's a late round mixed league pick. He hit 25 homers last year, and I don't see signs that we're heading into the 30s with that homer total. I think probably settling in the mid 20s is where what's going to happen.
A really intriguing trade for both clubs, a trade that kind of leaves you with a lot of questions about both clubs. The Rays send Brad Boxberger to Arizona. The Rays have actually been really active in moving pieces out of their bullpen so far. Do you like Boxberger as the guy to get saves in Arizona? Both do you like the pitcher, and do you have confidence that he's the guy?
I'm going to mostly say double no's on that.
Yeah.
He hasn't been a really effective reliever since 2014. Those first three seasons, sub-3 ERA. The last three seasons, which includes the 41 save season, an ERA either well into the threes or well into the fours. So I'm not really confident. And he hasn't thrown a lot of innings the last 2 years, like under 30 innings each of the last two seasons. So for now, assuming that if the Diamondbacks don't do anything else with their bullpen, then I guess you could consider him in the late rounds, depending on what they say as we head to spring training. I think the arrival of Boxberger just makes me wonder what's going to happen with Archie Bradley, too, because Archie Bradley would be really exciting as a closer, but I'm starting to feel like that's not going to happen. Like, do you think Bradley could be their closer next year, or do you think they're going to keep him in one of those high-leverage setup roles?
I don't think – I mean, I could be wrong, but I think your read on that is right. I don't think that's a move you make if you're confident that Bradley is your guy. You know, maybe it's a move you make – if you're going to kind of see what you've got in Bradley, I could see that. Give him a flyer, but also have that guy to back him up. But I don't see that as a move of a team that says, you know what, Archie Bradley is our guy in the ninth inning. The flip side of this is the other end of that trade, which is the Rays. You know, there's been a lot of talk about whether they might move Colome. Does this, do you think, signal anything about whether Colomé is going to be in St. Petersburg or somewhere else in 2018?
Yeah, it does. It does seem to kind of make it a little more likely that they're going to keep him. Just, it's not just Boxberger. I mean, they let Chase Whitley go on waivers, and I know Chase Whitley's not like an ace reliever, but he is a guy who gave them more than 55 innings last year, was a mainstay in their bullpen. Like, that bullpen is really, really shallow right now. So unless they're going to get back other relievers or in some other way in a Colomé trade, or I don't see the Rays going out and spending in free agency. Like, we're seeing Petit, like, is going to get upwards of $10 million in total in his contract, it sounds like, with the A's. So I don't see the Rays spending. So if the Rays want to be at least competitive next season and have an outside chance at making the postseason after trading Boxberger, letting Whitley go, I don't know how you trade Colomé and have a bullpen that keeps you in the race. Like, do you think that this makes him maybe a little more likely at least to stay in Tampa, or do you think that they're so free-thinking and maybe cost-conservative that if they get a nice trade for prospects for him, they'll just do it anyway?
I think it's really hard to say right now, because I could see either of two completely divergent arguments, and one is the one that you're making, which is, you know, that their way of kind of cutting costs there is to move a variety of guys who might make some money next year and just say, you know, Colomé is a guy at the back of our bullpen, and we'll put in starting prospects, and we've got a bunch of live arms, and we'll make it work. The other thing, you know, there continues to be this bubbling question around the Rays of, are they going to try for the first time in a long time a really significant retool? You know, I haven't seen that firmly reported anywhere, but I have seen kind of hints of that, you know, this is a team that's had a really consistent way of doing business, which is, you know, to try and win and build at the same time, and it's extremely difficult to do, and a lot of times what happens is you end up with 82 wins. And so, you know, I think there's this question of, do they try some kind of more drastic retool and aim for a year or two from now? I'm not saying they're doing that, but I could see that, and I could see these moves being a precursor to dealing Colomé as well and dealing away some other pieces beyond that. And I think it would be understandable, but I don't think you know. So I think, to me, you know, my read on this is, I'm curious to see what happens in the next 2 weeks and to see, do they go out and add pieces that indicate that they're trying to win again in 18? Do they ship some more pieces away? And based on that, I think will give us a much better read on what they are looking like for 18 and what is likely to happen with Colomé.
Yes, I mean, we've heard a little bit of even like Evan Longoria trade rumors, which we never used to hear. I think that's the kind of thing where if Longoria were to be traded, or if those trade rumors started to pick up to the point where it seemed like there was a lot to them and they maybe weren't speculative and that they were definitely accurate, then you'd start to say, okay, I think the Rays are willing to really take their team in a different direction here, and if Longoria was in play, kind of everybody's in play, and they would trade him. But I feel like as long as they're probably holding Longoria and Wilson Ramos, who may be a lot more attractive right now to teams than he was a year ago, if they're holding Kiermaier, if they're holding Souza, then you probably hold Colomé and hope that things break right for your team, because there's a decent amount of talent in that rotation.
Speaking of relievers who have closed at one point, who were dealt, is there anything at all to like about Jim Johnson? I mean, they wanted him, you know. The Angels went out and got him. I think, as we've discussed here before, I am not in any way a Jim Johnson guy, but do you think the fact that they wanted him means that he's a guy who could get any saves there at all, or is this just the Braves dumping a guy?
Yeah, I think it's mostly the Braves dumping a guy. I was surprised the Angels went out to get him. I mean, it lines up a little bit, just in that here's someone with 176 career saves going to a team without an experienced closer. But I think I'd have to really hear something during spring training that changed my mind on him. For now, he's firmly on my do not draft list, where if they're talking about him being the closer, I'm still not sure that I would draft him. I just maybe avoid the situation. So, yeah, I think I'm out on him. And I haven't even heard anything from them that really indicates that they think he factors into the ninth inning. They may just be adding a bullpen arm.
On the flip side of that, is there anybody, because it wouldn't be utterly shocking if the Braves dealt Vizcaino, is there anybody now in that Braves bullpen that you like as a hedge if Vizcaino is dealt?
Yeah, I think Jose Ramirez has some potential. I mean, I'm seeing some skills from him. respectable strikeout rate. Last season, you know, 3.19 ERA. Now, that does come along with a 4.90 FIP last year. So, I mean, it's not all great. There's some control issues there. But maybe Jose Ramirez is someone to keep an eye on if they were to deal Vizcaino at some point. I'm trying to figure out the path I think the Braves are going to go on right now, just in the sense that they have a new management team with Alex Anthopoulos, so they could play the long game. He's probably got a lot of job security. Or they did open a new park last year, which might create some sense of urgency to keep Vizcaino, keep, you know, and really try to make a run at the postseason and give their fans something this year. So I'm not sure. I don't know if you have any opinion. You're down there. Maybe you have an opinion on what path you think they're on right now.
Well, no, I think that's very much the question, and I was just talking to somebody about this today, that they have been really quiet since bringing in Anthopoulos. Now, that's partly because he's had to hit the ground running and learn an organization, and there's been a lot of turmoil within the organization, so there are a lot of reasons for that. But one of the things I was talking to somebody about today is, if you're a new GM there, you have to ask that question. And I'm not saying you have to change direction, because I don't think you do. I think it is entirely defensible to decide that what we're going to do is stay the course, continue this rebuild, continue for aiming for maybe not this year, but a year or two, have all of this come together and build something really special with this hall of prospects that we still have. But I think you have to ask that question. You have to ask yourself, do I have to follow this plan that my predecessor laid out, or do I look at a lot of young talent? Do I look at Albies and Swanson and Acuna and all these guys who can play and say, you know what, I'm going to go out and add a starting pitcher or two, and we're going to try and get to the postseason? I think that's a perfectly defensible case, and so I don't know what the answer is, but I think they have to ask that question. I think this is another team where the next couple of weeks will give us an indication of direction, and without that indication, it's really hard to know what they're going to do.
And I think the biggest fantasy implication from that direction is Acuna, and how soon does he get onto the roster? Because now the Braves, after this sweep, the Braves have a GM in place who will likely still be the, could very likely still be the GM at the point when Acuna is up for arbitration, maybe even eligible for free agency. So delaying his service time, like, we're actually talking about that Anthopoulos could still be the guy who reaps the benefits of delaying his service time, not like a GM on the hot seat who just, you know, wants to make sure he gets every win he can out of his team this year. At the same time, Acuna is starting to look like he may be really major league ready right now. And fantasy owners, that's going to be a huge discussion as we head in through the winter and into spring training, is, you know, do you project him as someone who plays in 140 games next year or 80? And there's a huge difference there in whether or not you draft him.
The other part of that question, and not to go into a full Braves podcast here, apologies for that, but you know, the other part of that equation is that the way you make space for him is almost certainly by dealing either Nick Markakis or Matt Kemp. I think you're going to have a lot better chance of doing that in December or January than you are in May. So I think there's an argument to be made that he could start from more or less opening day, just because you're going to have a lot better chance making the space for him now. Now, of course, the alternative to that is you could make a trade and then bring in some stopgap to kind of hold the fort for 2 months. But, he's an exciting, intriguing player. And, again, it's just there are a lot of teams, certainly some teams where we just still don't entirely know their direction. And until we do, it's kind of hard to make these reads. One last piece, and I think you could argue another team where you're not entirely clear on the direction. The Blue Jays bring in Alednis Diaz. He will certainly have opportunities early in the year. Now, whether he'll have opportunities to play all year long is another question, but it seems pretty clear that there will be at-bats if he is anything close to the player he was in 16. Is he a guy on your radar in, say, an AL-only or even a 15-team mixed, or is it he's not at that level yet?
I think AL-only he should be on the radar. I think 15-team mixed probably not, but he's on the watch list. And I mean, with Troy Tulowitzki at shortstop and Devin Travis at second base, it seems really likely that Diaz is going to have stretches next season. As well, if he's hitting well and at least fielding respectively, that he's going to have stretches next season where he's a starting player for months on end. I mean, I think probably even 120 games is maybe even slightly optimistic for Tulo and for Travis. So there's going to be games for him to play. He could get, even for an AL-only owner, he could get a cup, two or three starts a week right from the beginning of the season trying to keep those players fresh. But, I mean, the Blue Jays would be really, really fortunate if their starting shortstop and second baseman went through the next season without going on the DL. I think it's really high odds that Diaz, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's hitting well if he played in 100 games next season. So he could have stretches where in 15-team leagues he becomes useful again.
All right, that's Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Brett Zinke, for taking the time to talk. And we will talk to everybody again after the winter meetings when maybe we'll actually know something.